Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. So tell me a bit about ongoing filings then. So it's obviously, it's a little bit hard to register. It's a lot harder to pay them, which is weird, but seems to be true.
Yeah.
So how do we go with, once we've dealt with getting a TIN and, you know, and we're able to pay them, we've got a US bank account, so we get the TIN, which is an individual person, we've got a bank account, we're all set up. What do we do next?
You've got to do your returns, right? You've got to submit your sales tax returns to the state. So when you get your sales tax permit, they're going to issue you a filing frequency. So it could be monthly, quarterly, or annually. And this is how frequently you need to submit a sales tax return to the state. So if it's quarterly, you do it every quarter, annually, once a year. You get the idea. So let's say you're monthly, you need to submit a sales tax return to the state and make the payment, which sounds pretty easy. In some of the states, it's really, really easy and it'll take you 5 minutes to do. Certain states, the sales tax return, if you're doing it yourself by hand, could take you hours and hours. Like Texas, for example, you have to break down all of your sales based on the locality. You've got to break it down based on the city, the county, the district, the special district, all of these different levels. And so it becomes very challenging for you to do it by hand. It also gets very challenging for you to do it without using software or without using a service provider like us, right? Who actually just takes care of everything for you. So my advice would be, if you're planning on doing it yourself, if you have the guts to do that as an international business, because it's already so complicated, definitely use some sort of software. There's a number of providers out there, Sovos, TaxJar, Avalara, Vertex, Taxify. TaxJar would probably be the best bet for Amazon sellers. If you're going to do it yourself, which I wouldn't recommend. If you're not looking to do it yourself, then finding someone in the United States who works with sales tax in every single state in the US and who specializes in e-commerce businesses would be great. And that's exactly what we do. We specialize in sales tax for e-commerce businesses in the US and outside the US.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So when you say outside the US, you mean for people who are based outside the US but paying sales tax within the US system?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. And e-commerce. Yeah. Because it's quite the crossover of two complex systems, e-commerce and sales tax. But famously, the relationship between them is still being shaken out. It's quite clear that the legal, when the law generally runs quite a lot behind reality, so that the reality of e-commerce growing like crazy has finally come to the attention of the lawmakers and they've actually got something done about it. So, you know, two decades after it's really started, I mean, Jeff Bezos saw this opportunity in what, 1992? Quite crazy to think how visionary that was. But, okay, yeah, and it does make sense to use a specialist because most accountants don't deal very well with e-commerce. In my experience, I've got an accountant who's got her head around it, partly because she took some of the training I did in e-commerce, and partly because she's based in the UK and so am I. So at least they've got that in common, even if e-commerce is a big push. But e-commerce plus sales tax, I agree that in my experience, you need to find quite specialist people. So yeah, whoever you use, that makes sense. So tell me about the actual, so that's the return side, which sounds like a real mental hernia in some states. What about the actual tax payment and collection? How does that work?
Pretty easy. The payment is pretty easy, assuming you have the bank account, right? Generally, the payment will be made at the time you're submitting the sales tax return. So there shouldn't be too much drama there. The tax collection, once you set it up, as long as nothing changes, you'll be fine. There's so much nuance and complexity to setting up the tax settings based on the channel. You really need to do your research and make sure that you're setting it up correctly. Just making sure you're setting up Amazon or Shopify or whatever sales channels you're on. The unfortunate reality is, you know, you mentioned a second ago that the laws haven't caught up to the technology, and that's definitely true. But also, in some respect, the technology hasn't caught up with the laws either. So many of these sales channels are very limited in how sophisticated they are and what they allow you to do with collecting sales tax. And sometimes you just have to do the very best you can to collect the right amount, to collect the correct amount from your customers. So as long as you set everything up correctly, you should be ready to rock and roll. There's a number of issues that will crop up over time, though, particularly around when you are listing new products. And especially if you're using a listing tool, for example, when you're listing products on Amazon or on your website, if you're using a third-party listing tool, oftentimes it can mess up the sales tax settings. It can override your account level defaults and you won't even realize it. And if you are just launching 300 new SKUs and then 3 months later you realize you haven't been collecting tax on them and you've been paying tax out of pocket, you're going to have a bad day. So just being very mindful of your listing process and making sure that in your checklist you have sales taxes, a sales tax review on the product level as part of your process.
Makes a lot of sense. So yeah, first of all, just baking it into your processes. Secondly, recognizing, I guess, that it is not yet baked into the processes either of the actual marketplaces, although it sounds like Amazon's got a handle on it. But I'll ask you that in a sec. But it's not necessarily baked into the standard software either. So we have to take special care to check that.
Exactly.
So coming back to that I just left that hanging. Is it the case that Amazon has basically got it nailed down in terms of the process?
So, well, when it comes to tax calculation and collection, they have it basically nailed down. And there are tools inside of your Seller Central that make it really easy for you to collect the sales tax and then just say, you know, which states, city, county, city, district, what's your permit number? And it's pretty straightforward. They give you flexibility around if you want to charge tax on shipping and gift wrap. And I don't know why they even give you that flexibility, because the law is the law, right? But they have it pretty baked. We have seen isolated instances in Arizona and Florida where certain districts, they're collecting the incorrect amount of tax. It's relatively small, but we're perfectionists here. And so we just kept doing this analysis and we're like, every single one of our clients is off in Arizona. We go to Amazon, we go to Arizona, we say, you know, here's what Arizona is saying, here's what Amazon's doing. And we have like verifiable proof that they aren't collecting it correctly. I mean, we're talking they're off by a couple percentage points. So we're not talking a whole lot of money. Do they have it fully baked? I give them an A, but they don't get an A++. That makes sense. But it's hard. Sales tax is challenging. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like for practical purposes, they got it right. And to be fair as well, if you try to be A++, if you wait a month, then a state's going to change its mind about the definition of sales tax nexus or whether they're going to be marketplace facilitator. Or so yeah, it's kind of not worth their while to get it 100%. If it's like 97% right, then I think it probably makes sense. So I'm going to skip over the question of what happens if you get your own web store, because I almost feel like that's going to be a separate episode. We could get you back to talk about that. But sticking with the Amazon thing for the moment, there's a whole argument that sort of I have to put to you, which is that other sales tax experts who also have, you know, like yourself, very deep knowledge of the area say you're just making it easier for the states to chase you. You shouldn't register for any sales tax, which sounds like a crazy statement after everything you've said, but it's out there and they're not just crazy people saying it either. So what's your response to that?
So there is some truth to it being easier for the states to find you, right? Because if you don't have a permit, if you are not registered with any local government at all, it's more difficult for them to find you, to audit you, because they'd have to audit an FBA warehouse, or they'd have to audit a vendor or someone else. They'd have to somehow find your business for you to even come up. And don't get me wrong, Amazon FBA warehouses, for example, are audited all of the time. Like it's just a regular routine thing. And that's how they find Amazon sellers that are not complying with US sales tax laws. However, I'm not comfortable saying, you know, don't get a permit because then it just makes it easier for the states to find you. Because if you have substantial sales tax liabilities and those are accruing and growing larger and larger over time, wouldn't you rather be on the radar and take the chance of potentially having a random audit? And if you're taking care of sales tax correctly, you don't have a whole lot to worry about, than the alternative, which is ignoring it for 10 years, getting audited by a state and having $100,000 in back sales tax liabilities. I mean, that's the reality of one of the clients that we're working with right now. They've been ignoring it since they started the business. And every year it's been more difficult for them to rip off that Band-Aid. And now they're at the point where they have to, and you can't really negotiate. So there is truth. There is truth to that statement. But I would say you always need to temper that advice with looking at what your exposure is and how large your risk is. So I wouldn't go out right away if you're just now getting started and getting registered in all of the states. That wouldn't be a smart idea.
No, absolutely. But for those who are doing substantial turnover, I mean, it's a very, again, it comes down to what we were saying in the last episode, which is the calculated risk thing, that you need to really calculate it, but you need to really be aware of what risk you're taking if you're going to take it. And I guess that it does become quite substantial. And would you say this is another thing that I've heard from people, that is less of a risk if you're an international seller than if you're US based? What's your view on that?
If you are selling in Amazon FBA warehouses, I wouldn't say that your risk is lower. If you're using Amazon FBA warehouses, your risk is probably about the same as a US business. And when I say risk, I'm not talking dollar values. I'm talking about the chance of you being audited. But if we look at overall the number of businesses that get audited, the number of businesses are going to be skewed towards US companies just because there's more of them. Now, as for the rates, I mean, I don't have a clinical research project on, I don't have, you know, data on this per se. But knowing what will commonly trigger an audit for e-commerce businesses, you're going to be about the same if you're storing it in FBA inventory.
I guess that it's hard to get around the fact that FBA concentrates a lot of things, including customers and the likelihood of making more money from a single SKU, but it also concentrates risk of being discovered by tax authorities should you be trying to not be, because obviously there are, what, 30 FFCs, something like that in the US? I can't remember, but it's not an infinite number.
Quite a few.
Yeah, it's maybe more, 50. Yeah, it's quite a lot, but they're not an infinite number and they're absolutely massive. And Amazon's politically obviously a very sensitive thing. So if Amazon isn't offering your state to put its Amazon's HQ2, that's been decided now anyway, isn't it? They sort of held that out as a carrot to try and stop states really with going too far with sales tax, I feel. But now they've done that, I guess politically there's a lot of pressure from the mom and pop businesses and the people who dislike Amazon, which is always going to be quite a substantial number, to push for it. So it's kind of an obvious target. They've got a big X painted on them and they're going to be hit. So I guess the chances of your inventory being audited in any given year in a given Amazon warehouse are probably not small.
Well, I definitely don't like to scare people. I wouldn't say that they're small. I also wouldn't say it's not small. I don't have data specific to Amazon FBA inventory, but I can tell you that in general, businesses get audited by a state 1-3% of the time, right? And so this is limited data, and this is a research study that I did, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago at this point. So who knows how that's changed. But I don't want to paint the picture that if you're selling on Amazon, you're using FBA warehouses, you're going to be audited tomorrow. That's not the message I'm sending. If you're selling over 10 years, right, we're looking at chronic systemic problems. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen 10 years from now. It's likely it will happen at some point if you are an established seller and you're selling consistently over a long period of time. You just don't want to forget about it, right? And that's one of our big messages here at Tax Valet, is don't forget about sales tax. Be strategic about your decisions and make sure you have that annual check-in and you know what your liabilities are in the states where you're not collecting. Because if you're going to ignore the problem, just be smart about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just thinking this is probably very, very dodgy statistics. So I was just trying to do a very quick calculation on my calculator that if there's a 3% probability per year of an audit, then over 10 years that I make that around about a 27-28% probability. So a quarter to a third of the chance. So, which is quite a big, if your liability is going to end up being 100,000, that's a hell of a gamble, like a 1 in 4 chance of getting $100,000 tax bill.
And it could be more. I mean, it could be more. And
this be a lot more. Obviously, I'm just plucking figures out of the air.
Yeah, and the states aren't supposed to do this, but they'll share information with each other too. And they'll say, hey, I see, you know, we did this audit, got these transactions, look like they crossed economic nexus in your state. Here you go. And they'll sort of trade them like Pokemon cards and get brownie points with each other. The risk here, it's such a frustrating situation because I wish you could ignore it and you didn't have to deal with it. But if you're creating a substantial business, it's something that you need to address because it's more than just audit risk. What we also see very frequently is in the event of selling the business. If you sell the business to another owner, someone else, right, they're going to typically look at the historical sales tax liabilities when they're doing the review and the analysis of the valuation of your company. And if there's substantial sales tax liabilities, or really any sales tax liabilities, they will take that amount, multiply it up, make it larger than it needs to be, and then take that amount off the valuation. So frequently, we'll be pulled in to try to clean up some of the sales tax liabilities so that they're all buttoned up before the sale of the business. So that's another reason why it's just better to get your U.S. sales tax cleaned up as much as you can.
That's a very good point, actually. I think that's a very, very, very sensible because the interesting thing about risk is it's different in different scenarios. So if you're going to just run it for cash flow forever is one thing. But yes, if you are trying to prepare a business to sale, famously, and again, this is it goes slightly outside the remit of what you're saying, but it's not really everything has to be put together in a strategic way, in my opinion. So talking to experts in selling FBA-based businesses specifically, there's still a market for it, but the market for businesses up to, say, $500,000 or $1 million value, which is pretty substantial because it's maybe 2 to 3 times profit. So you can say it's going to be doing several $1 million in revenue already, is quite different from the market for businesses worth several $1 million upwards, where they are normally the former businesses, the latter businesses, who we say the bigger ones, tend to be bought by less risk-averse guys. They're super, super sharp. So they're going to negotiate the hell out of you. If you have a sales tax liability, they'll be one of the first things they'll look at, any form of liability, like a lifetime guarantee, which everyone's just been going on about forever as a great sales tactic. It's a lousy legal tactic because an indefinite ongoing liability is something that's going to kill you when you come to sell it. So do not do this, folks. Put a 3-year limit on it, whatever you like, but put a limit on it. Anyway, but really much more damaging. If you're selling to a former doctor or a former CEO, a retired lawyer, those sort of people that want to get an Amazon business on their hands, if it's a lower valuation business, quite commonly they will buy it and run it themselves as a sort of retirement project or semi-passive income, a bit like you might buy a property portfolio and manage it. Those guys are going to be much more risk averse, from what I understand, for the guys who've done a lot of selling of these businesses. And if there is some kind of, especially if you're dealing with a retired lawyer, for goodness sake, or a retired accountant, the first time you mention unlimited and unknown liability, they're just going to run into the hills. They're not even going to bother to stick around to bother to negotiate a lot of the time because they're risk-averse type buyers. They're kind of retail buyers as opposed to really commercially minded, right? So you've just raised an extremely important point that I think, again, I'm not giving any advice. God knows I am not giving sales tax advice to anyone. But I think what you've raised is just a really critical point, which I love because it ties in with the philosophy that I want to get across in the 10K Collective, which is, forget about this tactical nonsense. It's not about tactics this year. It's about how does this all fit together into a bigger picture? And if you have an objective of selling your...
Yeah, and the larger vision for your life. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. If you're a person that's totally risk on and you're not bothered about selling your business, then you might make a completely different decision for somebody who wants to be able to sleep at
night.
Or they're going to sell a business in 2 or 3 years' time that's maybe going to be worth a few $100,000. They're going to be doing a retail type sale.
And it's totally personal too. It's totally personal too. I'll give you 2 very short examples. I've got one client, he's doing less than $1 million a year in sales. He is totally paranoid out the wazoo about audits, and he wants to make sure every single thing is buttoned up exactly, right? And he's planning on selling his business someday. So he had Nexus in like 38 states. He got permits in all of them. His liabilities were rather small in many of the states. But he said, I don't care. I need to do everything correctly because I'm thinking about getting some serious financing for this business. A year went by. He applied for some like federal loans from the Small Business Commission, I think is what it's called in the United States. They looked at his sales tax and wanted to make sure that he was all buttoned up on the financial side. And he said, I'm so glad that I did that, right? On the flip side, I've got another client. She is based in, she travels all over the world. I'm not even sure where she is right now. Bali or, you know, Switzerland, I don't know. But she has substantial sales tax liabilities. She's doing over, I think she's like over 2 million per year. And she has Nexus in like 30 to 40 states. She only got permits in, I think, 3 states, right? And we bring this up to her and I say, hey, you've got these substantial liabilities. Are you sure this is what you want to do? And she's like, screw them. They can try to find me. Catch me if you can. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do. And that just shows you the stark contrast between the temperaments of the business owners. And what I say, it's not my place to judge, right? If you understand the risks, you know the liabilities you're carrying. If that's how you want to run your business, then you should. It's totally like how you spend your money, how you run your business is totally personal and differs from individual to individual.
Absolutely. But I mean, I really hope that today, we've given people the tools to go and make some accurate assessments of risk and then make their own decisions out based on their own thinking. And again, that's really what I want this podcast to be all about. And you've really, really helped that mission. So to think the bigger picture, but the details matter, but they matter within your own risk profile, within your own business aims. And you need to go in informed, but there's no cookie cutter responses to this. And you've been very forthcoming about that. It's not cookie cutter stuff, but you've wended your way between the rock and the hard place, you know, the whirlpool and Charybdis, whatever it is in Greek mythology, because if you generalize too much, it's basically actionable and not legal. And if you're too detailed, you're just going to everyone's going to go and hide on a rock because it'll be a 15-hour podcast.
You get paralyzed. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. So I think you've done a lovely job for us. Thank you so much, Alex. So just to mention that, folks, I'll put some links on for ongoing outgoing links to Alex's site so that if you want to get that help that I mentioned with the free tools, we'll just go to amazingfba.com/taxvalet, V-A-L-E-T for valet. Alex, any parting thoughts on this complex topic for us?
Just take action. At least know what your liabilities are. Don't ignore the problem. It'll take you an hour or two and you'll be glad that you did it. What you know can save you a fortune later on down the road.
Great advice. Can't top that. Alex, thank you so much for coming on.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million US dollars or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.